Born and raised in Philadelphia, the city that revolutionized the pro wrestling industry, Jeff Desiato has rekindled his passion for the sport he loved as a child. Join him on his journey to discover what makes pro wrestling such a uniquely enjoyable form of entertainment. This is the Why We Enjoy Wrestling podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Why We Enjoy Wrestling podcast. My name is Jeff Desiato, and I'm excited to recap the last Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and of course, Clash of the Castle. I'm going to do a brief episode today because I'm under the gun. Most of the episodes are around 30 minutes. I might have to stop it short of that. So let's dive in right away. We're going to recap the go-home edition of SmackDown first, before Clash of the Castle. We started off with Naomi versus Chelsea Green. That resulted in Naomi defeating Chelsea Green. Not much of a surprise there, but we do see the ongoing relationships between Chelsea and Piper and Naomi and Bayley, which was setting up, obviously, their match at Clash of the Castle. The other thing we have was Apollo Crews versus Santos Escobar, and it looks like they're starting to put some time and effort behind Apollo Crews. He's really talented in the ring. The fact that he is jacked and super smooth in the ring leads me to believe that there's been a problem with his character. But this is typically one of the guys that you would think Vince McMahon would have gotten behind. I know he has been an Intercontinental Champion before, but he ruined him by doing the whole Nigerian gimmick. How do you have a guy go from having no accent to having an accent to not having an accent again? We saw Baron Corbin coming to the aid of Apollo Crews after a segment backstage. Love to see Baron Corbin getting attention. They love him over in Europe. Absolutely. He was getting chants. We'll see what they do with Baron Corbin. Maybe he's going to tag team with Apollo Crews. It's unfortunate. I mean, I know that Bron Breakker is the guy that they're looking to push, but I would have loved to have seen their tag team on the main roster. Maybe they will interact at some point. That would be interesting. But I'm excited to see people who have been with the company for a long time and have not gotten sufficient TV time on the main roster start to be developed, especially as we come out of the WrestleMania season. I think it's important that you start to move on to different stories. I feel like there's been Judgment Day, Bloodline, and that's kind of been the last 2 years of wrestling. So you got to start developing stories that are coming up alongside of those to take over while those stories, and they did that successfully with the Alpha Academy, which we'll get to eventually. Next up, we had Nia Jax versus Mia Yim. Jax basically squashed Yim. Great interaction with LA Knight and Logan Paul, with LA Knight crashing his pool. I'm loving this, and I hope that this is something building towards a huge program, not just a blow off at Money in the Bank. I want to see this at SummerSlam, and I want to see it get ample TV time. I'm getting a little tired of the same people being on TV all the time, and it's time to heat up LA Knight for sure. Kevin Owens versus Solo Sikoa. Solo Sikoa won, and we saw Randy Orton return to give us a huge pop, and we're going to see Randy Orton and KO involved continually, which is a great tag team. So that was SmackDown, and that also set up what we had at Clash at the Castle. So let's get to that real quick. I thought it was a good show. I loved that the matches have been really strong. Here's my problem. There is so much time between the matches that I feel like I'm watching a television show. Because one of the things about, I've said this before, one of the things about PLEs that used to be awesome was like, well, I'm going to get more TV time than I would on a weekly show, and I'm also not going to get commercials. Well, neither of those is the case now. Even with it being a premium live event, we get 20-minute breaks between matches, and it's under 3 hours. So, yeah, it's just, that's something I'm never going to get over. I do like the short run time, but I would like to see more. I would like to see more story in wrestling, less recapping and advertising. But I know that's the name of the game, and that's how it's going to be. The PLE opened with Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles. They set up brilliantly the idea that Cody could possibly quit because his mom was there, and that could factor into the decision. It did not, ultimately, but it was a great match. It had an old school feel to it, probably because Cody got color and AJ, they wanted to do their best. I was a little disappointed with how the match ended. I know the whole storyline was like, Cody's the pretty boy. He is honorable. We want to give him an edge, but I don't like seeing my baby face, my white meat baby face, hit a guy who's quit with steel steps. That's just me. I don't like that unless they're going somewhere with this. I don't see Cody as a tweener. I don't see him as a Steve Austin type. And I think he should stay like Superman in a way, instead of being Batman. But everybody's been saying that he's Batman and Seth Rollins is Joker and all that stuff, so I get that. There's some crazy spots in this match. The Brainbuster on the announce table, I was like, what the heck? I'm not a long-time wrestling fan, so the Brainbuster move is just something that like rarely gets brought out. The first time I ever saw it was during the Gunther-Sami Zayn match at WrestleMania, and I thought it was a botch because it looked so horrible. But that's just the way the move is, man. It looks like, I'm like, I don't know how they do this without killing each other. Moving on, we had a surprise outcome with Alba Fire and Isla Dawn winning the tag titles. This match was criticized online, some botches and everything. They got the hometown pop, which was really nice. But other than that, I just don't know what they're doing with these tag titles. How do you keep switching them? The whole point was that Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair were supposed to be the ones that added legitimacy to this tag division, finally. Now, I get that it's kind of hard to have them be the champions because they are so strong. And you don't have the tag team to beat them. Now, I thought Zoe and Shayna were a legitimate threat to them because they're shown to be these fighters, these tough girls. And then they're the ones who ate the pin to Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. So I don't understand the booking of this match at all, but I am going to let them cook. Moving on, we had Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable. I was kind of hoping that Gable would win. I think that this whole Otis turning on Gable thing is taking too long at this point. We've seen this before. The Sami Zayn thing and everything. And we never got the teases with Sami turning the way we're getting these with Otis. Like, and then what we saw on Monday Night Raw, it was just weird. Like, I like the story. I like what they're doing. I like the performances of everybody involved, but I don't like that we keep getting these near pops with Otis that I feel like are going to deflate the massive pop that they would have gotten. So we get to, you know, on Monday Night Raw, we see that Otis pushes Gable finally. And everybody's like, yay, that's it. And then you're like, oh, wait, no, that's not. And then he just says, like, we're leaving. Backstage, I'm like, what? That didn't feel right. So I'm hoping they can keep this story hot and don't overthink it in a way. But Sami Zayn retained, which was a questionable decision. But now that we've seen what's happened with Monday Night Raw, it makes a little bit more sense about what they're doing. Bayley versus Piper Niven. Piper Niven got a great response, and she's really good in the ring, actually. Bayley retained, but it was nice to see Piper Niven. Hopefully she ends up moving on. What I was surprised to not see was I thought for sure that Piper Niven was going to turn babyface at the end, with Chelsea Green being the catalyst for that by berating her or something like that. That didn't happen, so we'll see where that goes. I'm afraid it's going to end up being like what happened to Selena Vega, is they have this great championship PLA match in the front of their hometown crowd, and then they go off into obscurity again, which would be unfortunate. I think, why not just keep Piper Niven as an established either heel or now a babyface, maybe to go after Nia Jax if Nia Jax wins. Maybe that's what they're waiting for. Maybe they're going to have Nia Jax win the title from Bayley at SummerSlam, and then they're going to turn Piper Niven babyface to challenge Nia Jax, and then you have Jade Cargill to try and challenge Nia Jax, and then there's a whole list there. But yeah, it'll be interesting. And then finally, the main event, Drew McIntyre versus Damian Priest. This was a great match. The outcome was predictable, but I do like the execution of it. I thought it was really funny the way they did the whole wide shot. So you see somebody running, you see a spotlight on the aisle as somebody's running down, but you can't make out who it is. And then as soon as he slides in and you see those Nikes and the slick back hair, you know it's CM Punk, obviously, but it's still a funny shot the way they did it. And I just love the production things that they're doing. It's really good. Questionable to not put the belt on Drew McIntyre. I still feel like he should have gotten the victory. I think that Triple H is walking a fine line with not paying off story beats for prolonged periods of time. Now, granted, it all was satisfying when Cody won at WrestleMania, but when you saw that they were going to pivot away from Cody, man, you're like, what? That's one of the reasons why it was so frustrating, is because you've asked us to follow along with this person for so long, and then you just keep pulling the rug out from under us. So I'm a little nervous about that with Drew McIntyre. However, the developments on Monday Night Raw speak to that a little bit. So overall, Clash at the Castle was really good. It was very entertaining, and it moved by at a brisk pace, with the exception of all of the terrible recap, you know, 20-minute breaks between matches. But anyway, let's get to the Monday Night Raw that everybody's talking about. First, I did not see this coming at all. Seth Rollins returning unannounced to start off the show. He looks great. He was walking a little strange. It may have just been the boots that he was wearing, so that made me a little nervous. But it's a great look with Seth Rollins. He's got the shorter cropped beard, a little cleaner cut looking. I loved the white. It's almost like an homage to Shawn Michaels there with the all white and the hat. Damian Priest looking strong. And now we have this match. I mean, Seth Rollins is not going to take the title off of Damian Priest and Money in the Bank. And if the goal was to get to Gunther Priest, then Seth Rollins is actually a perfect person because he loses nothing from not winning. But it also is it's a strong match. You know it's going to be a great match, and it's a legitimate contender for the title. So this is great. The timing is perfect for Seth Rollins to come back. This title scene is starting to get really interesting because you have, you know, Braun Breaker possibly waiting in the wings. I'm sorry, not Braun Breaker. I meant Braun Strowman waiting in the wings because he's had some history with the Judgment Day. Maybe he will be, SummerSlam. I was going to say, yeah, I guess Braun Strowman's not going to challenge for the World Heavyweight title just yet. Maybe that's down the road. But that would be interesting because you had him with the Judgment Day this whole time. So we'll see where that goes. Braun Strowman had a match, speaking of, with Chad Gable. And we saw what looked like the end of Alpha Academy because Otis lashed out. He shoved him across the ring. Everybody was freaked out. They thought it was so good. But then he just walks away. There's no actual, like, payoff. And then later we see him in the locker room and he's like, that's it. You know, we're leaving. And he's like, wait, what? And then he announces he's going to go and qualify for Money in the Bank, which we now know is not going to happen based on the final 5 minutes of Monday Night Raw. We saw a triple threat match with Zelina Vega, Kiana James, and Io Sky. I do like that. I wouldn't be surprised if Zelina Vega is challenging Liv Morgan at Money in the Bank for that title. If for some reason Rhea Ripley won't be back for SummerSlam, you could drag out that story to SummerSlam possibly to give Liv Morgan a rich story for the title. If you have this build up, I feel like Zelina Vega is either a Money in the Bank opponent or a possible failsafe if Rhea Ripley is not cleared to return to action at SummerSlam. We had more interest and intrigue between Damian Priest and Finn Balor about the Hotel Key card. I'm interested to see what happens with this. Liv Morgan with Dominic's vest. That was really fun how they played that whole thing out. And then you have a great segment. Absolutely great segment. Sami Zayn, Braun Breaker, Sheamus. Braun Breaker, he needs to be the one to take the title from Sami Zayn. I don't think anybody else needs it. Braun Breaker is the hottest up-and-coming dominant heel. And I think, I've been thinking about this actually, WWE has learned their lesson. When you have somebody who you really, really want to get over with the audience, you start them out as a heel. They learned from Rocky Maivia, thankfully. They've learned, with John Cena, he was kind of like a baby face sort of in the beginning, and then he turned heel and he got over. Austin Theory, I think they tried with him because he was a baby face in NXT, if I'm not mistaken, and they bring him up as the protege or whatever, and he started out as a heel, but it was more like go-away heat than anything else. They pushed him too hard. So it's interesting to see. We're seeing some teases of him turning babyface. But I think the way they're doing Braun Breaker has been really interesting and really strong because you want to watch him beat people up. And I think he'll eventually organically turn babyface. But for now, a great possible next Intercontinental Champion as he rises up the card. And then Sheamus having the added story of always wanting that to get the Grand Slam Championship. It's the only title he hasn't owned in WWE. And then they set up a great match between the two of them. So, we got a lot of things, interesting things going. You got Ludwig Kaiser breaking out in singles competition. I'm curious to see what happens with Giovanni Vinci. I feel bad when they like kind of break up a faction, and then there's one guy who's clearly just like ignored. I think he was in an NXT Battle Royal, if I'm not mistaken, but I haven't watched NXT. So, but I do like Ludwig Kaiser. He's got like a model Rick Martel vibe to him. He's just somebody, he's got the hate the face kind of guy, as you would say. So we had that whole schmoz with that match. We had another LWO Judgment Day singles match, Dragon Lee, Carlito. Carlito surprisingly picks up the win because of all the shenanigans. Let's see, backstage we had Shayna and Zoe interrupted by the tag team champions. So we'll see, there's more going there. I'm interested to see if Bianca and Jade just split up now, or will they continue as a tag team briefly? Drew McIntyre, a segment where everyone loves CM Punk and he just walks out. Now, would this quitting have been a lot better if The Rock hadn't spoiled the fact that Drew McIntyre had re-signed? Yes, it would have been very interesting to see what they were doing with this, because if it was still out there that he hadn't re-signed his contract, you could really toy with reality here. But that's not the case, although they're spinning it as like he just signed a contract, but because of the way they're not treating CM Punk, he's willing to walk away from it. So I'm interested to see. It also set up what we then had, which was the excuse for why Triple H and Adam Pearce and Drew McIntyre weren't part of the destruction with the Wyatt Six as they arrived. There was a match between Damage Control and Kaden and Katana Chance. Kaden Carter and Katana Chance, sorry. Kind of a useless match. Sorry, I'm not trying to say anything mean about them, but we just don't care about these people. Damage Control has really fallen off. And it's no fault of their own, I guess. Then we had a match, Sheamus and Braun Breaker. As I said, it was interfered by Ludwig Kaiser. And we got a lot of cool mid-card storylines going on, intertwined and stuff. I do like how they're intertwining all these stories. And then the main event, Jey Uso, Rey Mysterio, Finn Balor. And unsurprisingly, Jey Uso wins. I'd be surprised if he's in the Money in the Bank match. It's kind of weird when you have someone make their intentions known, the first person to announce, and then you have a qualifying match. It'd almost be better if you just put them in it. But yeah, what do I know? And then finally, what everybody's talking about, the arrival of the Wyatt Six, S-I-C-K-S, Nikki Cross, Eric Rowan, Joe Gacy, Dexter Lumis, Bo Dallas, all confirmed. I'd be interested to see if he's going to be confirmed as Bo Dallas's Uncle Howdy, or is it going to be treated as he's a completely different entity entirely, and we're going to just ignore Bo Dallas, maybe. I think that would actually be stronger, to just treat him as a completely different person, whereas everybody else, I think, will be, you know, a version of who they've been and been seen on WWE television. Nikki Cross has a huge backstory, so you can't just make her not Nikki Cross anymore. But I do think that with Bo Dallas, you can get away with it not being Bo Dallas anymore. But obviously everybody knows who it is. But this was handled very well. A lot of buzz, and I'm hopeful for where it heads. We see Chad Gable. There's been a lot of discussion about who was in the shadows and in the smoke that have been knocked out. Chad Gable was the only clearly visible one, so that kind of explains the outcome of Clash at the Castle if he's a part of this storyline. There's a lot of rumors about people who have turned on their families being the targets, so that opens things up. But what I do like to hear with the rumors is that a lot of planning has gone into this, and they already know where they're going. That's encouraging, because that's one of the biggest criticisms with Wyatt and the whole Wyatt stuff, was that it just kind of meandered and there wasn't a direction. Now, much of that could have been because of Vince McMahon's influence and him changing his mind or disagreeing with what the original vision was, so that it ended up becoming a convoluted mess. But I'm excited about what this does. I'm also excited that it's not going to be supernatural. It's just going to be more like almost like serial killer-esque, which is reality-based, so that's cool. But I need to leave it there because I got to leave for work. Thanks for tuning in. I hope that you guys come back next week. But until then, get out there and enjoy all the wrestling.